You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Wham Goat presents the Van Flip Podcast.
What is up? Welcome to this week's episode of the Van Flip Podcast, brought to you by none other than Lamb Goat. And today I'm sitting here with a longtime Lamb Goat band and a longtime member of this band, Mike from Darkest Hour. Welcome to the show, man. How you doing today?
Hi, how you doing? Lamb Goat, Lamb Goat Internet, Lamb Goat Video. I'm here. It's me. I'm not anonymous.
Yeah, today.
Today.
Have you ever, curiosity, I know we were just literally talking about this, like right off camera, and I wanted to bring it up later on, but since you just brought up the anonymous part, have you ever personally anonymously commented?
Never.
Never? Okay.
Never. I'm sorry, I'm a reader, not a... I probably posted as myself back in the day when I was, you know, I guess when I was learning that, you know, it's better to just read the comments and not give a fuck than it is to actually get in there and get crazy.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, it takes, you have to have
this site's
on.
Been around for a long time. Look, the site's been around for a long time. We were a band before social media. We were a band before cell phones. You know, And so I feel like my mind has developed. I have grown with, you know, not only this site, but like hardcore and heavy metal internet subculture. I have been along for the ride too. So it's like, you know, I guess I'm down here with my people today, y'all.
in the trenches, as we call it, in the slum.
Here we are,
slinging the mud.
Yeah,
that's what we do. That's what we do best. You know, that's what we bring up the drama.
Hey, but this is where people that come from the scene like that I think Darkest Hour was born from, I'm a part of, I get, you know, I relate to every band on this site, all the people on the site. So I also gotta admit, this is gonna be controversial to say, but I think I might love this site.
I think you're not alone.
This site is like chronicled our band's history almost to the point where, like, when I need to remember, like, what year was that Curl Up and Die Sadist Nation tour? I just slam go, there it is, you know, like,
yeah.
So I appreciate this community.
Well, and you know, we appreciate not only you, but bands like you and other bands that understand and are willing to, you know, get down in there, or you know, just participate with us in general. Not saying that a lot of people don't, but there are a random few that, you know, have shunned us or just decided not to work with us. But either or, no, it's funny you say that, because, you know, you guys, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe you guys started like mid 90s or something like that, right?
Yep, 1995.
Yeah.
September 23rd, 1995.
God, I remember the date.
Well, it was an important day for us anyway.
Yeah, well.
You know, I mean, it was our first show. We also had a really close friend die on the way to the show, which is sort of his story. His name is Brad Catchy. Is intertwined with everything about the band when it started, you know, the first day of the first show. You know, everybody that's on this site knows about the hardcore and heavy metal community and friends and how that's really just a big part of it, you know. And so when you're a new band and you get your crew to all come to the show, and everybody goes out to support and crowd kill or whatever y'all do now. We had a friend that didn't make it, man. And it really shaped the rest of my high school experience.
Yeah.
Bonded the band. And so other than being the band's anniversary of our first show, you know, it's Brad's day too. So that's why we remember it.
Yeah, that makes a lot more sense as to why you would remember it. Not that you wouldn't remember it because it's your band's birthday.
Trust me,
like
I don't remember a lot of shit.
And unfortunately, you can't go to Lambgoat and find that information because we started, or this website started shortly after that. Not 95, it was like 98, 99. Fine. So
a lot of the early shit I don't want on the internet anyway.
There you go. That's fine. That's fine. But hey, let's fast forward to this year. Like a month ago, or this past month, it's August. So yeah, in July, you guys signed to Monarch Heavy, right?
Yes, we did. Some old friends work there. Actually from another label we had worked with in the past called E1.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, we've signed a deal and they're going to put out two records. And I don't know how much detail you want because I'll just never shut up. But
oh, all the details,
bro. They're going to re-release our Godless Prophets in the Market Flora, our last full-length record, which came out, 5 or 6 years ago now.
Yeah, 17, I think.
Crazy. And then shortly thereafter, they're going to release our 10th studio album, which we've been working on for... which feels like our lifetime, and it's coming out, it's done, it's turned in, and we wanted to, like, I'm sure we're gonna get on this, but we have actually been doing a Patreon and really having a great time surviving over there for the past couple years.
Yeah.
And we have been doing a lot of independent releases. We are, you know, entrenched here in Washington, D.C. with the DIY subculture, so mm-hmm. we have released and done a ton of promoted self-release things, and with this new record it really felt like, man, it's time to team up with someone who knows distribution, promotion, who can handle it, because you know, one thing about doing everything yourself is it's hard to do everything really well.
So we
got connected to them through another Lambgoat superstar, Carl, from, you know, we all know Carl,
Good Fight and Ferret.
Good Fight Ferret. I don't know which brand he should be associated with, so with work. But Carl, he's a big wig. He's been out there moving and shaking, and I talked with a lot of people who are managers and work at these labels, just because I also manage Darkest Hour, and he actually brought a really good deal and a really fair kind of opportunity for us to still control a lot of stuff and do what we wanted to do, but kind of upstream what we were doing. So yeah.
Is he
a perfect combo?
Is he working with Monarch as well now, or is he?
He works to get us involved, and okay. There's a couple of other people who are there. This guy Steve Seabury, who is awesome, we've worked with for a long time, and of course Scott Givens, who was in charge over at E1 and seems to be in charge over here, who is also a great guy. And we've always, you know, had a really good relationship as far as freedom mm-hmm. with them, which is important to us, especially since we were also on Victory Records, which y'all know about. So we like freedom a lot, and so that's what we got over here.
Yeah.
And we're excited for y'all to hear this record and launch the opportunity with them, which is all happening now.
Yeah. And this is all coming out early 24. This podcast comes out probably in like 3-4 weeks, so just give you an idea of like where the schedule is.
If it comes out in 3 or 4 weeks, go buy the Godless Prophets and the Migrant Flora vinyl reissue. It's in 6 different color variants, and they are a badass, and you want to get them all, because man, people always ask me about repressing records and getting them, and man, it's not that easy to get the same type of record pressed. So if you have a collection and you want them, or if you haven't got that record on vinyl, we love our last record. It was special to us because it was crowdfunded, mm-hmm. Distributed by Southern Lord, but just really controlled by the band too, and we really want people to hear it, and that was part of why we wanted it, just to just throw it back out there again. It's a great record.
Yeah,
you know,
we
so
just
get it.
Yeah, just cop that shit now. We're dipping our toes into the vinyl game as well. Record label, we relaunched the record label a couple days ago. Not relaunched, it was always there, just very, very, very dormant over the last 15 years, but we're gonna be putting out the 18 Visions EP on vinyl. They're not signed to us, but we're just doing the physical stuff.
Cool.
With them.
That's big.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Pretty nice. And then Pariah, another tech metalcore band from back in the early 2000s, they are coming back, and we signed them, and we have their EP coming out as well as some other things for both bands, hopefully in the future.
Did I see like a Dead to Fall thing, or did I make that up?
I mean, we work with Dead to Fall, but John was just featured on another song with another band, and last year they put out a handful of songs prior to Furnace Fest, like new songs.
Okay, well, that's still great. 18 Visions, that's awesome. I mean, that's another band that's been from the, I guess, second era of Darkest Hour, who's been doing, you know, music on and off this whole time. And it's, that's going to be, is it their new record? That's pretty cool.
Their EP that's coming out, their second EP is a part of a trilogy, I think. Cool. They've got some plans coming up, and then they got some other things in the pipeline going down for the next year or so. So we can't talk about that yet, but you know, hopefully it'll be something we can bring up in the next couple of months. But to pivot off of me, and let's get back to you, big guy. So you guys have been in the band for quite some time, 95.
Yeah.
And I want to ask a question, but I don't want it to sound off-putting. I'm curious as to why.
I thought this was Lamb Good. I thought I was going to get a lot of off-putting. Let's start it. Let's go.
So why?
Why what?
Why stay in the band for like fucking almost 30 years now?
Are you kidding?
I know. I'm just curious, like, as to what. I'm just curious.
Everybody on this site knows why. Like, it's awesome to be in a band. Like, being a band is all, like, I love
it's
music.
Also very look, hard, look at, Mike.
Look at, so, I mean, yeah, a lot of things are hard, but it's kind of, it's funny to get asked that question because, like, I can't imagine doing anything else.
Right.
Like, I love this. Like, everything I do is, like, somehow to do with guitar, somehow to do with music, really. Like, I love it. I love the adventure. I mean, I'm not saying I love the suffering of being in a band, but I'm at one with it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I think when you've been through so many or as many obstacles and tragedies as Darkest Hour has been, I think that you start to just become like, and a lot of these ideas are actually kind of featured on the new record, but ones that we have collectively tattooed all over ourselves and we talk about in the van. I mean, we're just constantly exploring the idea of, you know, life is suffering, and so to live is to suffer. So to be out here is to be wet, be cold, be tired.
Hey, what's up? It's Lurk. Looks like you're enjoying the podcast. If you are and you like what we're doing here on the Van Flip, why don't you go ahead and pause this and give us a rating and review on whatever platform you're listening to. If you want to find out any information on your favorite bands from the hardcore and metal scene, visit lambgoat.com. And to stay in the loop about everything that we post on lambgoat.com, make sure you like us on Facebook and you head over to Twitter and Instagram and follow us at lambgoat. Are you a full-grown adult and you also have a TikTok account? Congrats. Follow us on TikTok as well. You can find us under the username lambgoat.com. That's spelled out D-O-T-C-O-M. Head over to our YouTube channel where we have all of these podcasts in video format, plus a lot more content that you should check out. Make sure you hit that subscribe button and you hit that notification bell so you're always alerted when we upload new content. And last but not least, if you want to follow me, Lurk, the host of the show, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at LurkCity. And as always, if you need any of the links that pertain to the artists on the show today, Lambgoat, or myself, you can always find them in the description. Thanks for listening to this message. Now let's get back to the show.
Be drunk and hungover. And you know, you just have to be like, but this is the game. We love this. Like, we love going on tour, playing, the routine of tour, the food, the traveling.
Yeah.
You know,
it's very unique.
And just
it's
going,
a very unique
going to a show. Like, I love music. I went to a show last night, Havoc, Toxic Holocaust,
oh, nice.
I Am,
yeah.
and Hammerhead. Went to that show, knew all the bands, like, just felt welcomed, all the fans, I was out front, everybody's talking to me, like, I just, like, love, like, heavy metal, too.
Yeah.
And, I don't know, like, to be asked that question is strange, because it's just who we are, and not only who I am, but if you look at every member of the band, like, John, our singer, has been in this band his entire life, he's done music his entire life, you know, like, we've suffered through this the entire time, and he absolutely loves it, and there's no... there's no like I don't want to go on tour again talk or I don't want to it's like all about when am I going to Tokyo, that's in September.
Yeah.
When am I going around the US, that's November. You know, and Aaron, our bass player, has been in the band over a decade. I mean, before he was in this band, he was in bands when I met him in high school. I know him longer than everybody in this band, and everything about him since he was 12 is music, you know.
Yeah.
And then you have our drummer Travis Orban, who you can all Google, you know, YouTube. He's been on bazillion records. Drumming is his life. I mean, he does like working out and looking rock hard, you know.
Yeah.
But putting out his own music art, that is what he spends all of his time doing.
Yeah.
And so and then our newest member, Nico, he has been in a ton of bands that you all know. Suicidal Tendencies, he was in Fallujah. You know, I think he played in The Faceless for a little bit. He is just also went to school for music, probably one of the only one of us that did that. So the reason why is a strange question, because this is who we are.
Right. I'm just curious because
it's not for money. And it's not for fame, because we're, you know, B-level famous. But I love the level of fame that we are, because I go somewhere and someone like surprises me that they know who Darkest Hour is, and then immediately they're like a friend, because it does go back to that hardcore, you know, 90s. I think of it as the vegan straight edge movement, but I know it was bigger than that, but that's what I was a part of then. But this is the thing where you like see someone in a store who had an Earth Crisis shirt on, and you just go right up to them and go, oh my god, you like Earth Crisis? Are you straight edge? Are you vegan? What do you know about the show with Torn Apart and you know? And that's how it feels now. So
I was talking about that exactly.
That's a long answer to your question.
I appreciate that. I only asked because obviously like there are trials and tribulations, and especially in the long 30 years.
Those make our best stories.
Of course, and like hard times, you know, do breed hilarious stories down the road. They're not funny or good to talk about right then and there in that situation, but good times, like a roller coaster ride, you don't talk about 10 years down the road, but you do talk about that one summer you had no AC and you had a tour and you had to sleep in the van for most of the time, you know what I mean? And those tough, hard times bring back nostalgic memories for some reason that are funnier and, you know, allow you to see where you've came from too, and you know how you've grown and where you've graduated up at. And so it's a unique perspective.
I also appreciate all the bands that we've got to tour with. I mean, you know, we've done a lot of tours, we've met a lot of people, we've talked to a lot of bands, and you get the perspective, you know, you're not alone. You know what I mean? And nobody is gifted this. Like, nobody, just because you have a dream, like just because your dream is I want to play heavy metal guitar and I'll you know, party all day and rock and roll all night, that doesn't mean that you just get to do it. You have to basically suffer to get to do it, and no matter what you do, really, if you want to do anything good. And so I think once you get addicted to doing things well, then you get immune to things being miserable, because you find so much joy in things being good, like, you know, what the songs you're writing or the performances of the band live or whatever.
Yeah. How do you guys maintain the ability to be in a band over the course of 30 years? Like, obviously it's, I'm not going to say obviously, but do you support yourself strictly from the band, or do you guys also have other hobbies, side hustles, other jobs elsewhere? Obviously you said the Patreon thing was going on, so that's
an income stream. Like, are you talking like personally? I mean, nobody in this band lives off the band solely, you know. Everybody who's ever been in this band has had a cavalcade of, you know, crazy side jobs. I mean, everything from getting experiments done on them at the NIH, you know, for money, to, you know, being a bike messenger, to working at Target, to, you know, working at Bazillion's record store, music shop, guitar lessons, blah, blah, blah. Myself, I don't really have another job, but I produce a lot of records. I've composed a lot of music for TV. I'm in a whole bunch of bands that everybody likes to hate on here and put out a bunch of music. And I'm also a father, you know, and I've been married to the same person the entire time the band's existed. Wow. And all those things kind of together take up my time, and as a family we make it work, and I make my career work. And it's kind of strange because I don't have like a clear A to B, you know, success arc of I'm a musician for a living, you know, but I have made it work.
Yeah.
You know, and so for the most part, whatever I do, you know, is really trying to, you know, hone my vision of being in bands or playing music or writing music.
Yeah. You know? And kudos to you for being able to run the gamut like that, because obviously, like I said in the beginning, not a lot of bands can, and a lot of bands do falter over time. And even,
well, I think it's the new ethic. I mean, to be quite honest, like,
elaborate.
Things are completely different now. You have people can be in multiple bands and be super successful. But when I was coming up, it was like, you're in Metallica, you're in Fugazi. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're not in Fugazi and four other punk bands, and you're not in Metallica, and you're not in, you know, a cover band or whatever. You're just like, that's your identity. Like, you know, Dimebag Darrell didn't do another band while he did Pantera. He did another band after Pantera.
Yeah.
You know, and so, but now you have people like, I don't know, the Periphery guys are a good example, how they just are all over the place putting out music, but they also have a central focus, you know, and a lot of the younger musicians who we associate with through the Sumerian record label, they had this down from the beginning, you know, the guys like in Born of Osiris, Animals as Leaders, you know, that kind of the younger bands are good at being in a lot of different bands and putting out music. And I think that's just a different thing that is now. Yeah, you know,
I do agree with that, because I think like before I would get bummed out if someone was in multiple bands, because then I was thinking like, that person's not going to focus on the band I like more. But then as I got older, I was like, oh, well, now that person can collect revenue from this band, that band, and this band.
Or just make more art faster.
Sure, true,
I think
true.
That's the other thing. Like, everybody on the outside always tries, I mean, not that you're on the outside, you are in the music business, but I mean, a lot of people outside of bands always just immediately think that money is the motive.
I think it's just to maintain.
But to maintain means a lot of ways now, like, and we've been talking about this because Darkest Hour has not put out an album in a long time, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
But sometimes it's better to not put out an album than put out the wrong album.
True.
So that's a balance. And I don't know, maybe this next record would be better digest if we just put out a song a month and everybody had a whole month to just listen to one song.
Yeah.
You know, and there are bands that are going that way. So I think that it's okay to welcome a new era where people can be in multiple bands, it can make different records, they can go on different tours. You know, bands can go on tour without the same members all the time. Like, fill-in people can happen. Yeah. Like, it's just...
It is a little different time, yeah.
When you
pull your head out of the sand, you take a gander at the last 25 years, it definitely has... The landscape's changed. I mean, everything about it's changed. Crowd killing and moshing's changed. People in different bands have changed. Record labels and releases have changed. You know, like, everything has changed. It's kind of crazy.
But, I mean, having been in a band which can boast that they existed before social media and now like still can exist during it, which, by the way, it's not just being able to do it or not do it, it's being able to do that transition and exist. I think that is a testament to why or how we've been able to just, you know, continue to focus on, we want to be a band, and like, what does that take? Okay, fucking, we'll make a YouTube. How do you do that? You know, and
begrudgingly,
we've been surrounded by some really good people. I want a shout out to our longtime tour manager and merch person, Tito Pacone, who has been with the band over 2 decades. If anybody knows about this band, they know about this person. He was the first person to tell us, yo, you got to move your t-shirt prices from $8 to 10, 10 to 15. Yeah. You know, the first person to tell us it was okay to have a show that was more than $10.
Yeah.
You know, and not because we were greedy, but because we were just so broke and suffering and not paying attention to what was happening around us. And it's funny, like, he started our Facebook, you know, without him, we wouldn't have those 150,000, whatever it is, followers. He started our YouTube, you know, without him, we wouldn't have a YouTube. He didn't start the Instagram because by then he just was like, you guys do that.
Yeah, yeah.
But he probably started our Twitter.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, we were so resistant, but we had people around us who cared and who pushed. And now we got the message, like, fine,
yeah,
embrace it.
It's live or die by the sword on that thing. But that was curious, because I was going to ask, like, how did, because you guys came from that era of, like, you know, more DIY. And of course, the Washington, D.C. area, DIY is probably a little bit, you know, more elevated than, you know, other local DIY
scenes. Talked
about,
let's just say it's talked about
right,
here.
Right.
You go to a show, the culture, everybody knows about.
Yeah, there's certain pockets of the country.
Record label bad.
Yeah.
Do it yourself. And it's funny for the dude who signed to Victory Records for a decade, who put out 5. Not that I'm sour about it, but it's like an easy shot. Like, you know, I haven't lived or died by the DIY ethic my entire life, and I've been burned, and I've felt reap the rewards of it. But I'm totally... immersed with the ideology of it and okay with dipping in and out of it when I need to suit my needs.
And it's not, and you know, to clarify, like, because there is like a line between the DIY and the, you know, labels making and the money making side of stuff too. It's like my theory on that is like, and what kind of drives me with Lambgoat currently is, how can I get more people involved in the music scene? Like, how can I steal people from like Disturbed and Five Finger Death Punch or Slipknot? Like, those who are teetering on that edge and they just need to fall down a crack or something like that. And then next thing you know, their life's ruined because then they're in the world with everybody else that we love, you know, and they just are stuck here now. You know, you don't really get out of this scene. I feel
it's like. Funny. You described like hardcore to me.
Yeah.
Because before hardcore, I liked, you know, Big Four stuff,
yeah,
you know, thrash metal, and I liked Pantera, but I didn't fit in, I didn't know where right. I fit in. And then one day I heard, you know, hardcore music. I heard a DC hardcore band called Battery, and then I heard Earth Crisis, and then there was this summer tour Undertow and Unbroken went on tour in like the early 90s, and I went to that show, and that was the first time I ever saw people dogpile on each other and not sing along or whatever. And then I was immediately stolen. Like, heavy metal, like just paused for me. And for the next, I don't know, not decade, but a real long time,
right.
I was a hardcore kid, and that is where I existed solely, and I loved it. And in a lot of ways, Lambgoat, in the age of the internet, can provide that, you know, because you are a gateway to a lot of bands that are from that scene. You
know? And we try, that's the thing, like I was elaborating on, I try to bring more people down here into Purgatory, so there's more, you know, there's more money.
Love that you think about it that way.
It ruined my life, ruined your life, it ruins a lot of people's lives in a good way, Mike, not in a bad way, but like you know, you become so hype. I don't know, me personally,
this is the internet, people. Welcome to it.
You get hyper focused on certain things, and like there are elements of this, of both scenes, like metal and hardcore, that are just so much more drawing than, like, you know, the big festival bands or the big arena bands and stuff like that. But I'm trying to get those pocketbooks down here so a little bit more money flies around, so people can do it longer, people can tour better, or, you know, make more money, not sleep in the van all the time, you know what I mean? Like, just doing our little part here. So yes, it's not about money, but it is also kind of about, like, how much can we fund the art, you know?
Oh yeah. Well, it's art and commerce, and the commerce part is a big part, you know.
Yeah.
And we, believe me, we've struggled.
Yeah.
You know, we've done everything you do, anything that people do to survive at this point. But as long as you can, you know, sleep at night, live with yourself, and keep going, that's all you get.
What were some of the DIY bands back in the early to mid 90s that kind of drew Mike into either playing guitar or being in a band?
Oh, well, DIY. I mean, DIY. I mean, well, the first
or just,
is,
you know, the local scene.
Well, the first is Fugazi, because I mean, it's a fun band for everybody to throw around because they're cool. But I'm talking about really knowing them or just really experiencing them, because when I was a kid, I was unfortunate enough to be so into heavy metal that I was at several legendary Fugazi shows, not fucking even paying attention, because they play at this park. Summer concert series called Fort Reno that I go to every summer with my family now. It's a really cool DC only bands thing in the park, and of course Fugazi were the kings, and you can Google amazing photos of these shows.
Yeah.
They were incredible,
iconic.
Yeah. And in these shows, this was the ideology, you know, the do it within the scene, do it by yourself. And so that, I have to say, that is the first, you know, or the biggest, but they weren't the first, because the first was a band called Frotis. This is a band from Washington, D.C. They put out an amazing record called, I don't want to get the title wrong, We Washed Our Weapons Into the Sea, or it's not Wind, but, you know, whatever. They made that shit too long, but y'all can Google it.
Google it, yeah. Google it.
It was on Tooth and Nail, which is crazy, by the way, but it's an amazing fucking album. And Frotis was a band from the 90s, and I was their merch person, and I went on tour with them. It was the first time I went on tour, I went as a roadie. And that was the beginning. That was my biggest influence before. Then I went on tour with, later in the 90s, I went on tour with a straight edge hardcore band called Battery from Washington, D.C., who had a lot of success in the early 90s in Europe. And I went on a tour that was Battery, Better Than the Thousand, and a band called Veil from Germany. And that was the summer of 1998, the same year that the Choir of the Prophecy Fulfilled came out on Art Monk Construction, which is the second Darkest Hour EP.
Yep.
And this, okay, so touring with Frodis was like, oh my God, you can do this. Like, you can just call a promoter up and book a show and drive there and do it, you know?
That realization is so wild when it happens.
It's crazy. It's like, get off. And I had some friends in high school that were sick.
Yeah.
Like, this dude I knew could play double bass, could play Rain of Blood. It was awesome. But all he liked to do was party. He was fucked up all the time. And he never did shit. But then I went and met all these vegan straight edge kids. They were like booking shows in VFW halls and people were coming. And the bands weren't as technical as other things I've heard, but the music had a connection and the lyrics mattered, you know?
So they had more free time once than partying, yeah, you know?
I made that realization. I connected with the scene. I started going to shows. Then I got the opportunity to go as second guitar player to Europe with Battery in 98. And then that's when it was like, holy shit. We're on a tour bus.
Yeah.
We're playing these festivals. I mean, it was, I'm in this dude from Youth of Today is here. Like, my favorite band from when I got into hardcore music is Battery. I'm playing in the band now.
Yeah.
This is all I want to do with the rest of my life. You know, that was it. I was hooked. But it also proved that it could be done. And instead of having the bug to be like, and I think this would be a normal reaction for a lot of people, to be like, this is sick. Battery's got to keep going. I got to join Battery. We got to put out a new record. Look, we're in a bus. We can't let this fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't want this to fuck.
And a lot of people would share that sentiment.
No, my reaction was like, fuck, dude, I got to do this with my band.
Yeah. Okay.
I got to figure out, how did these guys do this? I got to do this because I liked playing in the band and I loved those songs because I grew up like moshing to them. But they didn't mean anything to me in the way that I didn't write them.
Right.
Like,
right,
it wasn't
right.
A part of me in there. And writing music has been, I don't know, a big part of it for me since the beginning too. So that's why that was just lit. So as soon as I got home from that Battery tour in 98, I booked the first Darkest Hour, or maybe it was like a year later, I booked the first Darkest Hour headline tour of the US. I believe it was 99 because it was before we recorded Mark of the Judas. And I recorded that, or I booked that entire tour with like a notebook of like numbers somebody gave me taped right to a wall, and I just cold calling people. Anyway,
old school.
Those are my first really big connections to what you would call DIY.
Yeah.
Frodis, Fugazi, and of course Battery, all DZ bands. I mean, to make it, you know, I will say Avail from Richmond, mm-hmm, was a really big band in DC, and they had a huge thing going on in the 90s where they didn't sign, they didn't do shit. They signed to Fat or whatever, but they didn't go to the majors and they stayed all about themselves. And that whole thing kind of creeped up into DC. So although we did later, you know, sign to Victory, you know, in 2000 or 2001 after, mm-hmm, the second label, MIA Records, folded, we, you know, definitely understood and began as a band where I would have been the person calling the promoter saying, have you ever heard of this band? We want to play on a Tuesday.
Yeah. We can pull 10 people, I swear. No, it's crazy. Like, you know, when you, like you were saying earlier, like, just people don't realize that they can do certain things. And like, I remember in my band, I was in a really shitty band for a handful of years when I was like late teens, early 20s too. And I remember just on, like, I asked them, I was like, how do bands, like, just become full-time? Like, how do you become a full-time band? And then as I'm saying it out loud, it, like, dawns on my head. It's like, oh, you just, like, have to book all the shit, and you have to do everything yourself, and you can technically do that full-time. You may not get paid, you know what I mean? But you're definitely,
see, that's
can just
the
go.
How do you be a full-time band? You be it.
Yeah.
How do you get paid? You don't fucking worry about it.
Yeah, it'll come.
You know, because if you fucking care about getting paid, then go get a fucking job. But if you want to make art and then survive on, yeah, it, so you can make more art, so you can just be what you do, so you don't have to work a job. Or, by the way, if you want to work a job so that you can just fund your art without taking anything out from the outside, that's okay too. And I wish somebody would have said that to me when I was a kid. I wish somebody would have said, hey, like, I know you want to be Eddie Van Halen, but you know, you also can be like a person who has any kind of job,
yeah,
you know, and you can make a band with your friends that you care about and music that you like, even as an adult, as long as you write lyrics that matter, connect with the scene, go on tour when you have vacation, and don't worry about posting on your fucking Instagram every day, and have an artistic thing you created. It is not about all or nothing. Even though that is how I literally live my life in every direction, I don't know about like turning it down, you know,
go,
or not.
These go
being
to 11. It goes to 11.
I'm definitely manic in every direction, but I have a lot of friends who hid that part of themselves for a really long time because they didn't know how to balance it with life. And it in that narrative that like, I'm a master Jedi musician because it's all I do.
Yeah,
you know, is false, because you can be that and be a lot of other things. And but that's not to take away from the fact that like, to do what we've done is to suffer from a ton of misery that I'm not sure if other people could. And that makes the story of our band and the story of the people on the stage something that's special, and also makes people gravitate to the band. And that's something you can't fake on the internet or bottle up anywhere either. So it is a balance.
I agree. I 100%
but
agree.
I encourage people that don't want to just sleep in a Walmart parking lot for 15 years of life to get somewhere, that it's, you can still be an artist and do music, especially with this thing called the internet.
Yeah, it's easier now than before, I would agree. I would say.
Well, easier.
Who's got it easier, newer bands or older bands, man?
I fantasize about one day the internet getting shut down and me having to go stand outside the 9:30 club again with paper flyers and hand them out to people. Like, that used to be...
There's something nostalgic about that, for sure.
You know, I hated it because I hated promoting my band, but I knew I had to do it because nobody would do it, but I hated it. Like, I would just pretend I wasn't. I would just pretend I wasn't in the band. It just felt like sad, or like, God, like, I'm just embarrassed, you know?
You're a guitar player, not a salesman.
As I don't know, I mean, I think that you have to be both eventually in this business, but I remember doing that, and I remember thinking this is hard. I remember making flyers, all that stuff. But you know, now that I also do almost all of the band's social media, and it takes me about an hour and 20 minutes to post shit around the entire scope that we have. I don't know. I'd be a fan of those earlier years.
Yeah.
Not that it matters, because it's not coming back. But
no, it's a little easier on the guys.
This is just for debate.
Yeah,
here
it's two older people talking about the new times. It's no big deal. Just get off the lawn, everybody.
But I'm saying, I'm not saying get off the lawn. I'm just saying I'm on this lawn drinking this Jack Daniels too.
Nice.
Okay? I've been here the whole time.
There we go. Before we, you brought up tours, and that made me think. There's two tours that I kind of wanted to bring up, or two bands that you had toured with or were to tour with. One is you guys had to cancel Misery Signal's Darkest Hour tour before COVID, and I was wondering if that was ever going to come back around.
Yes. Did we?
Yeah, it's on
the. I know we canceled the sick ass one with him, so that was going to be badass. But did we cancel Misery Signal?
Yeah.
Okay, first of all, can we just say fucking shout out to Misery Signals for being fucking awesome?
I agree.
Fucking killer. And then also, can we just say, by guilt by association, shout out to Comeback Kid.
I agree.
New fucking record. Awesome fucking dudes. Killer fucking band. Can't fuck with Comeback Kid either. I don't care what you guys want, Anonymous. They're badass. I forget. Oh, yeah. We were back on Misery Signals, who are... What do I think it'll ever happen again? I would love that to happen, because I love every incarnation of that band. You know, we have toured with all the singers, you know, but I also know that they're artists and they love that they are pushing forward with the things that they're doing. I know Ryan is doing some producing, and I think
also BJJ.
They are, you know, kind of in their own place. So wouldn't it be good for me to be like, yeah, I fucking want it to happen, because you know, I want them to be happy. Like, if Stu is where he's at with Comeback Kid, then enjoy that. But I mean, of course, if you called me up with a Misery Signals tour tomorrow, I'd be there. And you know, I will say, that we did this live stream thing during COVID.
That was in lieu of the tour. You guys did that?
Well, we did a live stream. It was a benefit for this club here in Washington, D.C. called the Black Cat, where we've grown up playing, grown up going. It was John and I, the lead singer of Darkest Hour, we've cleaned the bathrooms there. I mean, it's like where punk lives really in D.C. to me, and it's like just feels like home. We did a benefit for that venue, which they allowed, because we were going to do, I should say, but we were going to do a show there for our 25th anniversary, right? And then that got canceled because of COVID, and we had the date. So we asked them if we could use the room to film a live stream and then give them money from it. And we had no idea like how successful it was going to be. We gave them like, you know, $6,000. Wow. And it really helped them, especially in a time where they were, that was like before people had figured out any funding. Yeah. And blah, blah,
no
blah.
No one knew what was going on.
Yeah. But then it was kind of done and we were like, man, wow. Like that was kind of fun, which sounds crazy because now a live stream concert in my house, whatever, does not sound fun. But
no.
It was fun at that moment. So we thought, let's do it again. Let's find someone to do it again. And I mean, in lieu of that tour, yeah, we teamed up with Misery Singles. And man, their live stream concert, I believe it just came out on vinyl. They put out a vinyl version of it. Mm-hmm. We've put out a vinyl version of it too since then that you can get from our Big Cartel or part of our Patreon, which is something else we did. That's amazing performance too. You know, it's incredible that they were able to do that way they did. So, I mean, that's also a long answer, but I'll talk about Misery Signals all fucking day.
I will too, but we probably shouldn't on this particular podcast. We'll do that at a later
time. What are you going to do?
Because I want to ask you about another band that you brought up.
Who?
HIMSA. That was another band that was I really liked them back in the early 2000s. I mean, yeah. I probably saw those long-haired guys like shred down here. I'm in Jacksonville. They used to come down here all the time, I feel like, and they're from Washington State. But, you know.
Well, yeah, just here it is. Here's the shout-out. HIMSA from Washington State. The lead singer is John Pettibone, legendary hardcore icon singer of the band Undertow, which, by the way, since they were opening for Unbroken on this tour that I had mentioned, was one of the first bands that I ever saw do the dog pile, which and I will say also shout out to the band Damnation AD,
I'm
wearing a shirt of right now, who's the band who played before Undertow, who was actually the first band I ever saw where people like was metal but hardcore but
right.
dark but like The Cure but
like
loud
crossover.
And then the singer Mike McTernan, who's still one of the most legendary hardcore singers of all time, was just fucking menacing but also the coolest guy. And this show like not only defined like what I knew about music for almost the rest of my life, but also connected me with people that are still doing stuff. And John, the singer of HIMSA, later went on to do, you know, other music. They have bands all up in God, I can't remember the name of his band, and he'll kill me with so
I can
sad
look it
I
up.
Remember.
I can look it up. I can look it up.
But they are great dudes, and I attempted to get HIMSA back together for a European tour that got that fell apart because of COVID. But also go check out their Spotify. They put out some sick records, and hey, I'm still making phone calls. You never know when I can get them back together for a couple days.
That's what I was hoping. Okay.
I got Dead to Fall cooking again, and now look at them.
There you go.
I'm not saying I did that, but I'm saying, like, I don't know. At some point, I was like, you guys should do that if they asked me.
I would love to see Big Timber again, man. That Big Timber live again. I still listen to that track out of all the other tracks that they've put out. Big Timber's the one that I always listen to more.
Okay. Something that we've had to accept. And this is like classically hilarious to talk about it on the Lamb Goat podcast, but why not? All right. You know, Darkest Hour is metalcore. I don't know if y'all know that. It took us like a minute to accept that because early on, like, it was
death
real
metal.
Bad because we just wanted to be metal.
Yeah.
We thought we sounded like At the Gates, which we really like didn't sound that much like At the Gates. I guess enough, but like really, if you listen to like Hidden Hands of a Sadist Nation and you listen to Slaughter of Soul, they're like in the scope of metal, they're influenced, but they're pretty crazy different. I mean, especially the approach of the production, the approach of the playing, you know. And so I guess I lost my train of thought here, but
you're explaining how you're metalcore.
Yeah, like we had to basically, we hated it,
yeah,
and then when we got to the point where we had to accept it, I'm not sure where it was, but once we realized that's what we realized that there's a subculture of bands that people who like us also kind of like too. And we're not just a metalcore band, because there's a lot of people who like other styles of metal music that like Darkest Hour, and I think that's one thing that makes us a special metalcore band. But we have connected with, you know, Unearth, Bleeding Through,
yeah,
you know, Himsa, like, yeah, we mentioned, even Every Time I Die, Norma Jean. I mean, there's the if you look Between the Buried and Me, you know, Whitechapel.
I mean, yeah, like, back in the day, you just
it's
were
all connect. We were taking all these, yeah, Amir, like, there was a moment where even Parkway Drive, you know, we took them on tour and they fucking blew us away, no problem.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
we're,
yeah,
just those guys. And wow, we're just, once you realize you're sort of like, you're a rat and Unearth's Whitesnake, when you all tour together, all the 80s metalheads come out.
Yeah,
then,
yeah,
it's kind of like, it's kind of a freeing moment, because then you realize, like, yeah, I'm not embarrassed that I love this mix of hardcore, heavy metal, you know, guitar playing mixed with emotive lyrics, mixed with, you know, this culture of people where a whole bunch of people look crazy and who gives a fuck kind of thing. And it's like, you know, it is heavy metal, it is hardcore, it's a whole bunch of things. And I think that's what we were going for. So, yeah, in the end, if that's what somebody needs to call it to figure out where to put it in some category, like, why fight it like we used to?
Yeah.
You know,
I have a question about that, about metalcore for you too, because, you know, you guys started at an age where, like, metalcore technically had just kind of been budding around that time.
I thought we invented it. Didn't somebody say
Atreyu invented it? So they beat
no,
you to it.
That was Buzz from Unearth who said that Atreyu invented it. And then it was somebody from Whitechapel who said that Every Time I Die, it said that somebody from Unearth had started. The thing is, we're like second generation.
Of course. But my question is like, because if you weren't trying to write metalcore, right? Let's think back to the beginning. You're not trying to
Damnation
write metalcore.
Damnation AD, period. Yeah. How did I know? Man, you know, Overcast, which is a band from Boston, existed.
Right. Were you into, like, listening to Dead Guy and all that stuff then? Because all that stuff was prevalent.
Dead Guy? Okay, so what happened was I had gotten into straight edge hardcore, and John from Darkest Hour, we had met in high school, and we started hanging out, and he was ahead of me in his hardcore. Like, he knew about these other bands that weren't totally straight edge, vegan, whatever. And so he had a record player, which I didn't have a record player because I didn't know about them or whatever. And so he had 7 inches. So he had a Bloodlet 7 inch.
Okay.
And he had an Overcast 7 inch. He had I think it was Sheer Terror 7 inch.
Okay.
And he had an older sister, and he had just been connected to, like, other people who were older, maybe, I don't know, but he knew about these bands. But the connecting bond was the band Damnation AD from Washington DC, because we went to the show. It's funny that I'm wearing the shirt,
talking,
or whatever,
talking.
It's true. Like, that was the band that sort of let us know, okay, they were hardcore superheroes. These dudes had been in Battery, they were straight edge. The straight edge, most of them, some of them weren't. So that was the thing too, that they weren't just a straight edge band. They had some guys that were straight edge playing this hardcore show, but they played metal. And that's the thing, Unbroken at the time, by the way, they were crazy metal sounding. The bass player was wearing, like, this crazy pentagram shit going crazy, and everything was, there was a big movement in the vegan straight edge scene happening then. There was this band Falling Down from North Carolina that really would mix, like, Slayer, yeah. Morning Again, you know, was another band from Florida that mixed, like, kind of Slayer and all these bands sort of all at once happening sort of gave us the idea that, oh, this is what we want to do.
Yeah,
you know?
I didn't know if it was...
But what happened was, and right around we were discovering Dead Guy, you know, right around you're discovering all this stuff. I was working at a record store. And right around that time is when 1995 is when Slaughter of the Soul pops up, right? Swedish death metal record sounds, like, real evil and crusty all of a sudden. just connects with hardcore people in a new way. And you're all of a sudden, we're all like, whoa, like, what's up with like Swedish heavy metal? And then boom, it's like In Flames, who had just who had put out Horacle, you know, and then would later, you know, had put out Just a Race. They'd put out a couple things, or like that EP. Mm-hmm. And they kind of, everything was like weird, because you would go to this place called Tower Records and you'd end up in the black metal section trying to figure out who the fuck any of these bands were and whether any of them were Nazis or what was what. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's still going
on. And you're just trying to figure it all out. And I think there was just a moment where we were already talking about this idea of like, we loved the hardcore scene, but we weren't playing hardcore the way that Battery did, which strangely enough was also metallic hardcore. And we wanted it to be more metallic. And so at that same time, Swedish death metal sort of eked into, you know, the Tower Records and the mom and pop stores of America. Metal sections were easier to find. And then as we digested that, it was that timing that I think really made us write the songs that became Mark of the Judas, which was, you know, our first full length. And I give a lot of credit to our he's our second drummer. Like, our first drummer, his name was Matt Maven, and he knew everything about hardcore. He was just like, he loved hardcore, but he also loved death metal. He could play double bass awesome, and he knew, he identified more as a skinhead. And he wasn't like a racist skinhead.
No, the skinheads used to be a totally different thing back in the day.
He was a boots and braces anti-racist skinhead, but he was also into the... I don't know if he actually said he was a skinhead, but he had a lot of friends. And
he had a shaved head with
the same look. They liked boy music, but they fucking hated racist skinheads. Yeah. And they would be the first guys who would fuck up anybody who was at a show, who was there to fuck the show up. There was a lot of violence in DC in the early years, and you know, some of that was from some of those guys, and some of it was those guys. Anyway, Matt knew about hardcore, and he was our education, and he helped definitely take the band to where it got. But then when Ryan joined, I was talking about how I had been in love with this metal, and Matt had been, you know, kind of educating us because he was older, and John and I were co-discovering it, and we had just added a guitar player. His name was Fred, who also knew about some of this stuff, but he was like, we got to get my buddy Ryan to play drums, you know, because he really wants to go on tour. And then when we got Ryan was the fucking death metal encyclopedia.
Yeah.
Okay. So all of a sudden Ryan's like, yo, you got to fucking check out Carcass, dude. You know, you got to check out all these other bands like that we hadn't, you know, really gotten down into the, you know, Hypocrisy, Entombed.
Yeah.
You know, we hadn't gotten in there because they just hadn't gotten to us. It's hard to explain to people because it wasn't, we couldn't find everything the way you could now.
Of course.
You know? But I think that's a really long explanation for your answer again. That is how we kind of just discovered it was that whole universe colliding.
I didn't know if it was just like your influence from the big four type bands that you were listening to, and then your newfound love for hardcore, and then next thing you know, you just mend the two together, and all of a sudden you have a metalcore sound.
Honestly, like, I don't really call them the big four. It's like seven of them, because, you know, you got the four, and I absolutely put in Pantera. I put in Sepultura.
Yeah.
I put in Exodus.
That's why I said tight bands. Tight bands.
You know, I'm just saying, no. But I had a period where that was like what I lived by. And then there was that moment in time where I discovered Firestorm by Earth Crisis.
Destroy the Machine. People's backstory.
And then Destroy the Machines came out, and I was like, hold up. And then just pause.
Yeah.
Right? And then I was over here, and then it was Integrity, Dead Guy, you know, Damnation, Earth Crisis. That was my world. You know, Snapcase. And then it wasn't until At the Gates, you know, The Haunted, which came soon after them, In Flames, Entombed, that whole world. Then it's like, influences phase three, you know. And in some ways, we've still been changing, though, our whole life, because then somewhere along this journey, we fucking met Devin Townsend, people.
Yeah.
You fucking know who Devin Townsend is?
Yeah, for
He's
sure.
He's a goddamn genius, you know. And we have been lucky to record with a lot of people that I consider geniuses. Brian McTernan, who is a singer in another band I have called Be Well, has put out a couple records and was the singer of Battery, has produced shitload of your records here on Lamb Goat that you all love. I mean, he's a hardcore, metal producing, rock producing genius too. And he influenced our sound songwriting too, definitely, absolutely, right? But it was also, I think, the addition of Devin Townsend and his philosophy that helped get us into the next world, because Brian was really great in helping us understand who we were and how to write songs and where that all came from. And every producer is really good at things that they're good at, you know? And I'm not saying he wasn't good at the stuff Devin's not good at, but Devin can rip on guitar like,
oh my God, yeah,
someone I've never seen. And he's the most beautiful person to be around as well. And so his influence on the band, on Undoing Ruin and Deliver Us, and then just what we saw, what we learned, what we experienced in Vancouver those two times, and then what came out of that just opened the door to somewhere new. So there isn't any, like, the story of Darkest Hour is so long and it has so many chapters that it's hard to really break up in an interview with Lamb Goat with you all, because you guys, everybody here knows the real truth and the details. Whereas on other websites, I can just yada, 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 straight up to our next record coming out on MRNRK Records.
Yeah. Do we want to dive into the Victory relationship?
How could you not?
Okay.
Motherfuckers will be pissed.
Let's go. So did you guys just fulfill the contract and move on to E1, or like, how was your tenure with, you know, Victory?
We survived, people.
A lot of people have, you know,
listen,
different experiences.
You got. Okay, listen, you sign a record deal, okay? It's not great. It's not great. And then later you learn, like, shit, man,
it's really not great.
That was not a good idea. And then a little later you're like, fuck, that was not a good idea. And damn, this is a long contract.
Yeah.
Motherfuckers are ripping me off. Damn. Now, at that point, you can, three records of a 5-record deal in, you can just turn and fight, you know? And shout out to Hatebreed, Thursday, I think maybe even Taking Back Sunday are bands that have fought the law, fought Victory, and somehow won, somehow. I don't know how they won. But maybe we just really never really had a case. Maybe we just signed a deal that was like just low bar and we just took. I mean, I think it's important, if you're going to talk about the era of Darkest Hour in perspective, to talk about what Victory did do for Darkest Hour.
Right. You know, because there are positives and negatives to everything.
A lot. And then understanding how the business works a little later in my life, I do realize that, like, there was a combination of getting ripped off, feeling like we were getting ripped off, and expecting what we should get, and maybe not expecting more than what reality was based on what you think numbers mean. But, you know, we didn't have the choice to fight. You know, so we just decided to make records. And to be honest with you, like, it was Tony's crazed passion that allowed us to convince him to give us money to fly the band to fucking Sweden to record with the producer Fredrik Nordström, when people were like, what? On a Sadist Nation was recorded on a fucking shoestring budget. I'm telling you, I was a bike messenger. I was delivering packages to pay for them flights, selling fucking guitars I'd bought weeks before to pay for flights. And we stayed at a friend's, you know, flat. All of us slept on the floor that entire recording. I mean, maybe we shared a bed and everybody rotated, but it was rough, right? Like, but they still paid for it. And then to hire Devin and to go that route on Undoing Ruin, there's nobody that would have done that like that would have doubled down on that. And I think the ego and the craziness that makes Tony, as the owner that he was, I think allowed him to be ultra driven, no doubt. And I think that is what helped push to get Darkest Hour on Ozfest, helped push to get the money we needed to get Devin Townsend twice and get, you know, those albums to do well. And then it's the same thing that turned against us when you know, the Eternal Return came out.
Yeah.
We only had one record left, and it was obvious, like, diminishing returns. And I think for a long time, we were upset with Victory because we were like, man, this is our last record. You guys sort of turned, you know, like, but, like, in retrospect, like, that's business. Like, they're not going to keep investing in a band that was leaving. And actively, obviously not happy. And so that's, you know, kind of like how we were able to leave in the end is, yeah, we just completed it. We just survived. And it's a good thing we did, because to be honest with you, you know, Deliver Us and Undoing Ruin, those are right at the end of that contract. And if we had given up, we wouldn't have had those records.
Right.
And I still love The Eternal Return, even though it didn't have the commercial success of those albums, but it still fits right there in the catalog. And, you know, it's still a cool, dark, twisted record where it is, you know?
So my question to you then is, hindsight's 2020, would you do it all over the same or different with that deal? Like, would you
do it over same or different with the deal?
Like, would you take that? Would you take the deal now, or do you? I mean,
all right. Let's put it. Okay, we were a band that was playing regionally. I'm just trying to explain to you people where the mindset was. We had signed a big time record contract with MIA Records from New York City. We had gone up there. They told us everything. We had recorded this brand new record called The Mark of the Judas. I told my parents, I'm dropping out of school. I'm not going to my fourth year of college to graduate.
Almost done.
I already did three. I'm just not going to that fourth year. I'm just going to go. Actually, I had done 4 years of my fifth year. I'm just not going to go finish, because I'm going to go sign this record deal. Mark of the Judas, we're going on tour. Destruction. Boom. We go out there, lose a shitload of money. Last day of tour, record label takes us out to dinner, tells us, yo, you're going, guys, we're going out of business. This record's not coming out. And not only is this record not coming out, but like, my audio is doing. Not only is this record not coming out, but you guys are off the label, and you can't put this album out again because there's a UPC code and it's already distributed. So The Mark of the Judas is dead. Hope you enjoy your pancakes, you know? So we had just like felt like we had completely failed. I went back to college and finished my degree. We wrote So Sedated, So Secure, had to get these record labels, and Equal Vision, Revelation Records, and Victory Records were all super interested. And I think, you know, I mean, if I could go back, I do think we would have had a lot easier time navigating life if we had signed Equal Vision. Mm-hmm. I definitely don't think Rev would have been a good fit for us, because we were looking for too much from a label, and they, who have survived this whole time and have, I have a great relationship with Revelation Records, who y'all should know about here on Lamgo, and I'm sure you do. Fucking amazing record label, incredible people, buy their records. Equal Vision, amazing people, incredible label, buy their records. You know, we didn't sign to those labels, but I do regret not working with those two labels and Darkest Hour, but I don't think I would have not signed to Victory. I think maybe I would have tried to push like the deal points, but where we were at,
I mean, how can you not?
What would we have had?
Yeah, how can you
not? So no, I mean, I'm not one of these people who are like, yeah, no regrets, man, whatever. I definitely like will hold things and be like, damn, you know, and live with that. But at the same time, I think what we got out of it and where we got now, I guess might have been worth it. But I don't know. I'm sure that the other members, even the past members, don't feel that way. But it's like you can either hold on to all those regrets, but you when you do that, you really have to look at the things you got out of it. And you know, being able to be a part of the 2004 Ozfest was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being able to record those records in Vancouver was incredible. Sweden was incredible, you know. So
yeah,
I'm thankful for all that.
Nice.
And I know that Victory was a part of that. I'm not dumb enough to think
all you.
They didn't do shit.
Yeah, it's not all you. You know.
Wait. And the biggest part, no. Shit. Let me admit myself. No, I would have absolutely not done it different. You know why? Fuck. Damn, see, I'm so bad at interviews. Because the people I met at Victory were amazing. I mean, the people that worked at Victory Records were incredible. Rick Linus, Stephanie Marlowe, Jason Rudolph, Cliff Burlington. Man, I fucking know these people's names, man. You know, Monica, shout out. You know, like, there were so many people there that are still doing music and are amazing people and worked fucking hard as shit. And so the people that worked at Victory were incredible to connect with, and I really appreciate what they did for this band. And so we were very fortunate to meet them. And so, yeah, our embattled relationship with Tony and the whole deals aside, you know, there are good people there. So yeah, okay, answer amended.
He wouldn't change a thing, Tony.
I wouldn't change a thing. I'm not saying that. But I don't think it matters either way. Because no. you can't.
And it makes
it's
makes
a hypothetical you. We all like to talk about
of
over.
Of course. That's why I said hindsight's 2020.
We can all talk about it at the vegan hardcore barbecue, whatever shop you all hang out at. There you go.
I got it. Yeah, I always like to find out a little more from anybody that I can about the back end of like because there are certain record labels that are pretty well known for one reason or another, whether they put out great records or they had some shady back-end businesses doings or whatever, or they did both. And it seems like Victory is one of those.
They loved it, though.
Yeah, but Trustkill's another
one.
They
loved it.
And I've talked to Josh a couple times, you know, and we go back and forth, and he doesn't seem like a horrible guy, and I'd love to talk to Tony about, you know, his perspective on...
Dude, please, can we get the Tony Brummel interview on Lamb Goat? I would fucking love to.
I'm here for it. Make a call, Mike.
I'll be subscribing.
Yeah, make a call.
Absolutely. I mean, let him say what he's got to say. Fuck it.
No, I'm just here
to say, like, I'm not... I just want the world to know, like I think that a bad... You know, being a bad guy in your story, you know, you have to have perspective on that. And I understand what the pros and the cons were of that relationship. But I'm not here all day to talk shit or whatever. But I just think he was a volatile person. And he got his money. He got his millions. He got his deal. And he got out. You know, so he's probably on some island. He doesn't give a shit. But, I'm sure his perspective of what all these bands think would be amazing.
Yeah.
You know,
I personally
would love to hear it.
Because I did mention it to Josh, and I've talked to him on and off the podcast about it. And like, you know, like right now in the most recent time, I think, you know, like the Throwdown guys aren't like super stoked with him, but he's, you know, he's playing back into the online Twitter beef with them. And it's just kind of funny to see, I guess.
Oh, wow. I ain't got time for that. But... I'm not here for that. I got shit to do. I'm not here for the online. I don't give a fuck.
So let's switch it up then. Let's switch it up. Because you got a plethora of guitars behind you. I can see like 12. How many guitars do you have in that studio room of yours? Or in your collection, I should say.
Man, look, I have a rule. I try to keep it down to around like 30.
So you have about 30.
30. But I mean, I know it sounds like a little crazy when you put it, but you know, 15 are absolutely just sentimental ones you're just never getting rid of.
Okay.
And that's just annoying as shit. I gotta be honest. I hate clutter. I mean, I know it looks like I got a lot of stuff here, but I am not a hoarder. I'm a constant purger. I do not like stuff. I'm always trying to figure out how to make my rig be less and things be less. So behind me is just a casualty of a lifelong music addiction. You know what I mean? Yeah. But I absolutely love and endorse ESP guitars, and I have an ESP signature model that you all can buy on Sweetwater or wherever the fuck you buy guitars. It's over there, those white Vs. I love them to death, and everybody at ESP Guitars have been championing Darkest Hour for like over two decades easy. They make, in my opinion, the best heavy metal guitars that exist. So through that long-time relationship, I've had a lot of guitars to be able to play with. And I also have a bunch of other fun little toys over here. You know, I have a Zach Wild audio guitar. I have a couple EVH stripe guitars. And, you know, recently we got we got an Angle amp endorsement, which is really cool because we've been experimenting with new sounds this entire break. And like I said, I'm just completely addicted in love with music. And this is my little home studio where I've recorded a bunch of bands and produced a bunch of bands, and Darkest Hour will write and work at when I force them to. Sometimes we don't like to write here because sometimes people like a neutral space.
I get it.
If I'm like the main writer of a particular song we're working on and we're in my place, it's like, it's hard for people to, you know, because we're very collaborative when we write. So sometimes we don't always, but a lot of times we do, just because it's cost effective and everybody likes the vibe here and they like my cat. So nice. That's also a long
studio answer. Cats go a long way. 20. Studio pets go a
I have
long
20
way,
guitars so. And a whole lot of guitar amps, but doesn't matter because the truth is it's all about just like, You can only play one at a time.
Yeah. That's true. That's true. Is that a replica or a nod, an original or a replica nod to the Van Halen guitar?
No, that one over there, that's just an EVH art special that they did like a long time ago. And it's not one of the fancy replicas.
Okay.
It's more of like a $700-$800 like kind of beater Van Halen fun guitar. But I got that for a Van Halen cover band I did for a charity thing, and nice. It was awesome. Now nice. I can't get rid of it.
Nice. Sentimental, like you were hoarding it. You're
exactly.
Keeping it forever. Yeah. Just that one moment in time, it will forever live in your studio.
Yeah, but we're gearheads. We talk about it a lot. I know not everybody's like into that, you know, but I think that's also a thing that's connected us with a maybe younger generation of players, because we do like, you know, all these fun little new things too.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because I was meaning to ask you this way earlier on, but I know it's going to blow your mind. We're at like over an hour already, and we're just going to keep going here for a little bit. This went by quick.
Mike Schlabaum does not shut up.
Hey, that's fine though.
Anonymous.
You know, you're a great podcast guest, because, you know, I don't have to lead. I can just sit back and listen, and I love it.
All right. Well, full disclosure for anyone who's made it this far, this is the problem of when you do all the band's interviews for like 30 years, you know. But there's just too much of a story here. So it's like you got to pick and choose.
Well, we can't get it all out in 90 minutes, an hour anyway, so it doesn't matter.
But this is the Lamb Goat interview, so we got to go everywhere.
We're bouncing around.
All right.
So the last thing, I think what we'll end on is this. The question I wanted to ask earlier, but we got sidetracked. How does Darkest Hour plan or do gain the younger audience? Like, how do you touch base with the younger fans who aren't really familiar with maybe like your discography, your history, or maybe even metal music in general? Like, how do you guys approach that, like when you're writing, or how you present the band in general? Do you think about trying to pull in the younger audience?
Okay, so this might sound like crazy, but I think that the answer is wild, but to me it's you just don't.
Okay.
Like, I mean, we do have people that like we are constantly connecting to younger fans. I mean, I'm sharing a guitar cover from a 14-year-old on my Instagram like every fucking day. You know what I mean? In my stories or whatever. Like, there's plenty of people discovering us on YouTube, and younger kids doing, you know, covers, and there'll be people, families that chose to bring their kids who like that'll happen too. But I don't think it can be a goal of ours, because you know, youth goes where it wants to, and the older you get, the more you chase it, the more you look like a maniac for doing it. So I think what's important for us to do is make music that's honest about like our experience. And, you know, if it means that it connects with people that are over a certain age or from a certain age or more, then I think that rather than trying to worry about like who's not connecting to it, we just try to focus on like who is connecting to it, you know, because if young people in general, they're like older people, they like honest music regardless. So for us, it might be like an easy win to just take out younger relevant bands instead of always going with older dinosaurs or always trying, because we do that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? We are a support band, but we absolutely headline. You know, I mean, we headlined last year. We headline all of the time, and we support all the time, and we take out young bands. And if anybody doesn't believe it, look at all these bands we've been talking about. All of them opened up for Darkest Hour at one point.
Yeah.
And not saying for very long, but on at least a tour or two.
Yeah.
Because
you can look it up in Lamb Goat.
We do. Because you can look it up on Lamb Goat. You make a shirt, look it up on Lamb Goat. and you'll see that that's part of it. You know what I mean? So you can't necessarily like make it your goal artistically, but I think you can make it like part of the culture of your band to allow a space for younger people to be there and to exist there and to not feel like, you know, they're joining something that they're becoming a part of, but rather a space that they can already be a part of.
Mm-hmm.
And the other side of it is embracing, you know, social media and existing in a place that's accessible. Because I will say, for someone who's 46, which is my age, there is a tendency to just be like, fuck it.
Yeah.
I don't need to post anything. I don't want to be here. I'm just going to do what I'm doing.
Yeah.
It's not going to, but that is a part of the game of being relevant to whatever culture exists that you're going to connect to online that might come to see you. And so that is really played into why we started a Patreon, you know, is because in all everybody on the Patreon isn't necessarily even young, by the way.
Right.
They're just older people who have adapted to the way things are now because they still want to learn about stuff.
Right.
So again, I think, you know, to answer your question bluntly, like, we just don't make that a goal of ours. Like,
gotcha.
And we have been, we have had the same style of singing in this band, like, for since we started. And in the beginning, people be like, I love the music, but I hate the fucking vocals. Like, yeah. What are you thinking? And then somewhere along the line, my man started singing a little bit, not just screaming. And then people like, man, we love that. Like, don't ever scream. Like, just do that only.
Yeah.
And we never did that. We just always blended them a little. And you've seen what the genre heavy metal has done with the vocals.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But like, Darkest Hour is set. That Live and Lockdown record we have has songs from our first record and songs from our last record on them. And in a live set, they all fit together. You know, the stretches we've taken production-wise, songwriting-wise, vocal-wise, even though they've stretched, like, the idea of what is a Darkest Hour song, we have definitely not gone outside the parameters of what is modern metal music. So if you're going to connect to young people, you cannot just stay the same sonically.
Yeah.
You know? So while we aren't making it a part of, like, our mission statement to change how we sound to get younger listeners, we are allowing to develop how we sound to just get newer listeners, and also focus on just trying to make honest music that feels, you know, that it's of the age you're in.
Yeah.
And then you just kind of go from there. Because a lot of times it's hard to know what and how things connect to people that are younger because they have just a different perspective.
Of course. You know,
somebody's at 26 has a different perspective on reality than me, who's a 46-year-old, you know, father of a kid and shit.
Yeah.
It's wild.
Well, there's no wrong answer, Mike. I just wanted your answer. You know what I mean?
Oh.
Like, that's all.
Oh, I know.
All right. Well, let's wrap this up. If you don't mind, I'm going to, after we're done, I want to chat with you just for a quick second.
Sure.
But, plug the Patreon. You got Darkest Hour. What is it? How do you get to the Patreon?
Oh, damn. You ready for the highlights? Here we go. You go to the Patreon, official patreon.com/darkest hour. patreon.com/darkest hour official or official darkest hour. Fucking Google it.
We'll find it. We'll find it. It'll be in the description.
And then we're obviously on every social media, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, what's that, TikTok or whatever. And then, I don't know.
Does the album?
Threads, whatever the thing is.
That's a new
We're
one.
On all them jammers. So if you are on any of those, you can find us and just kind of keep up. We have the Patreon is really cool because we give away free exclusive items like songs. Like, we have a whole little download thing you can download, a bunch of like past B-sides and cool, weird stuff we put out. We do special gifts. Like, we just recently finished sending out a tote bag to everybody who's a subscriber. And the next thing we're doing, listen. Next thing we're doing is sending every subscriber a copy of the new record.
Ooh.
But you got to be subscribed like before November or around the end of November. You're going to get to hear the music first. In fact, right now, if you subscribe, you can see a bunch of behind the scenes stuff, a bunch of in the studio clips. I mean, we used to just post that shit all over social media all the time, but now
monetize.
It's more in a condensed place. Well, it isn't just about monetizing.
But it's good. Like, but
I know you're a DIY guy.
So I know you're going
to
hate it.
We have to fund the record, but it's also about cutting the noise away from all the bullshit. Like, yeah, you have to pay to be on the Patreon, but it's all there. Like, you don't have to look for a bunch of other shit. Oh, and then the other thing is, we're coming on tour
with
Exodus and Fit for an Autopsy and Undeath.
Yep.
And if you're a member of the Patreon, we're also going to Tokyo for 2 nights, anybody in Japan. And we're playing the New England Hardcore and Heavy Metal Fest September 17th for anybody in Massachusetts. All of those shows we're doing, like meet and greets, where if you're a Patreon, we do a little special time where you can come out, hang out with us, take photos, we'll sign everything. I mean, we also will absolutely do that for you any other time, like at the merch table or whatever. It's just with the Patreons,
guaranteed,
we're all there together at a time. Like, if you want to get everybody from Darkest Hour to sign your shit at the merch table, you might be waiting out there for a minute because dudes are at the bar, dudes are out back, dudes are side stage watching the band. Dude, fuck it. We're at the show too.
Yeah.
So we're doing live meet and greets with the Patreon, which is great because it's really awesome to hear people's stories about how they connected with Darkest Hour, and then also kind of just talk to them in person about how we've been spending their money to make this next record, which they're gonna love.
Yeah,
you know, and we're giving them new items every couple months, you know, just to say thank you and to make sure people know, you know, we ain't just like pocketing the money and buying Ferraris. We're pumping it back into the Patreon. We're doing exclusive digital stuff too. Like, we recorded our entire Deliver Us Live at the Black Cat concert. We're putting that out on like a DVD style looking thing that we're going to do through the Patreon. And that's been mixed and edited and will be coming out through all this fog of stuff too. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And that's kind of all connected to, of course, giving everybody the record before everybody else too. So the Patreon is like the main place where we've been sort of surviving until we've gotten to this point, and that's where we push everybody. But also, we have, like I said, by the time this comes out, Godless Prophets and the Migrant Flora is available from MMNRK Heavy, and there's 6 different vinyl variants and a bunch of different t-shirts. Hopefully, we're doing a drop of merch with Night Shift Merch, who, by the way, if you don't know about Night Shift Merch, motherfuckers need to go there now, because they have the best collection of heavy metal, hardcore, black metal, death metal, thrash metal, whatever, toys, man. Kareem, shout out to Kareem. Black Dahlia Murder, by the way, all them for, you know, being the flagship of that whole store and really pushing it. And I love that place. And so if you want to get Darkest Hour shit, you can get it there. You can also get it direct from us on our Big Cartel store, which is also easily accessible through. We sell a bunch of like stuff that just comes through here on tour, and we throw in fun like picks and crap with
But see, the thing, that's all good, man. You shouldn't be bummed out about the Patreon. That's a good move. It's a great move.
I'm not bummed out about
but monetizing it, you know what I mean?
I'm defensive because I'm on Lamco.
I got you. Hey,
Anonymous has a lot to say about your $12.99 a month.
They're gonna just type goo. All they're gonna do is type goo.
I don't give a fuck. I'm here to talk, and y'all can just talk back. I'm going to be over here by the time everybody's clapping back. But the people that do listen will hear that, you know, Darkest Hour is alive and well, and we got a bunch of shit going on. And hopefully I've covered it all, because at the end, I just want to say the album 10 is coming. It's turned in.
What's the title?
I can't tell you on here yet. But I will tell you this. The guitar playing is absolutely amazing. Fucking nailed it. And so did my boy Nico. Fucking souls are incredible. Get ready. But that doesn't even top the fact that the production by my buddy Taylor Larson, who has produced a bunch of the albums y'all know, like From Periphery to whatever, the King of Nail That mix. He also did the Darkest Hour self-titled, although there were a lot of cooks in that kitchen with him, so I don't really think that a lot of the creative decisions that we made on that record need to be attributed to him as a producer.
Right.
But this album 10 that's about to come out was produced by Darkest Hour, recorded by Taylor. Now, that's not to say that he can't produce, but we made these decisions this time. We are going to stand by everything that happened. And again, that ain't even the real story, because the real story is this is John, our singer's absolute best performance of all time. I mean, lyrically, it's incredible. Sonically, it's amazing to be able to do what he can do. And it's not just like, yeah, he can sing a little. Yeah, there's a little singing, but it's not necessarily like rock like what we were kind of going for with Sumerian. It's a little bit more in the vein of just modern, from anywhere from Gojira to Mastodon, whatever modern. But to me, it's just like his screaming, his delivery of his vocals have always been like so amazing. But dude, this is his album. Like, it's been, I think, 6 or 7 years since that record that we put out with Kurt, and he has come a long way. You know, the last record was produced by Kurt Ballou, and Kurt did a really good job of capturing John's like super raw spirit, but John has come a long way from that. And that's a lot saying for someone who's been in the band with him for 30 years. And that's not because he had a long way to come. Right. I'm just saying he has been doing other bands, other music. He's just been growing this whole time in the way that all of us have been growing musically. And this, like, I really can't say it enough. Like, this is his record. And as we were making this record, believe me, I mean, the guitars are my fucking focus. Like, I'm like, we got Travis Orban on drums. He's like one of the best drummers I've ever seen. No shit, this guy is amazing on drums. I know that people are going to be studying whatever he played on this record forever, even when he plays the thrash beat. And I know Aaron, our bass player, has done the best job that anyone can do, staying the fuck out of the way, being the glue, but also having creative ideas and being the, you know, voice of reason. And like I said, me and Nico nailed it. But man, I was not ready for how amazing this was going to be.
You sound very excited for the entire thing.
Well, yeah, fuck. Yeah, I'm excited it's done, but I'm excited that I love it. And I'm excited that it's here. And I'm excited all I have to do is talk about it now, and you all get to hear it.
And are you playing some of these songs on the Undeath Exodus tour?
We will be, because we will be also hopefully releasing a single by then, so you can all hear
that. That was another question I was going to ask, but you've answered.
Yeah. The single, yeah, we're working on a music video. You know, like I said, the album's done, but we're still in the final stages of the album art. I'm really excited about the album art, too. I feel we've always had, you know, kind of different and an eclectic look. I'm looking at all the records as I'm talking to you, you know? Yeah. And, I mean, I love a lot of the choices that we made, but this time, I mean, I can't give away any of it now, unfortunately, because the way everybody is on the internet, you'll just all forget about it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I am excited. And I think, you know, somebody who has been doing this for this long should be excited if they're going to put out a record. So, sorry if Bob.
No, it's all good. Excited. It's all good. Yeah, man, you're allowed to be excited. And kudos to you and the boys for, again, trudging along for almost 30 years and cranking out 10 albums and you know, EPs and singles along the way. And also, you know, maintaining a touring schedule. So that's a whole fucking thing in its own. But, Mike, thanks for being on the show. And if you don't mind, like, stick around for a quick couple seconds afterwards. I'd love to chat with you about something. But
cheers, man. Yeah. Cheers to the Goaters, yourself, for keeping it real. And if I see all you Goaters, like, live, you know, I'm standing at the merch table, walking through the crowd or whatever, say hi. Say what up.
Yeah.
Man, I like to talk to people and just meet the scene.
If you haven't gotten that from this podcast, Mike talks. So.
I ain't scared of you motherfuckers. Let's go.
All right. Thanks, man.
What's up, everybody? I am Finn McKenty, host of the Punk Rock NBA podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media podcast network. My podcast is all about doing what you love for a living, and every week I sit down and talk to people who have done exactly that. For example, musicians like Tommy from Between the Buried and Me, Matt from Periphery, Lil Lotus and Shinigami, among many others, photographers, artists, designers, YouTubers like Glenn Fricker and Sarah Dici, and I unpack exactly how they got to where they are today with the goal of helping you do the same. So if that sounds cool, you can listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com, and I'll see you there.